everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. For more than 40 years, this hour has taken on generally one topic, a serious topic, and brought in the finest minds to address that. It is not political. It is not ideological. It is simply looking for the truth. So here is the question. Is everything that our federal agencies, the U.S. Public Health Service, the FDA, the national agencies that oversee all of our health programs, Anthony Fauci, the World Health Organization, are they correct? Are they right in having even more and more lockdowns? Is it correct when the head of Moderna, who's making the vaccine being distributed now with serious adverse effects, is he correct when he says we're going to have corona forever? We were told that all we need is a vaccine, 95% efficacy. Are they correct about 95% efficacy? Because I'm reading Dr. Peter Doshi, medical doctor from the British Medical Journal, and he's saying there are two figures. One is subjective, that's the 95%, but the other is actual, and it's 0.7%. And so he asks a basic question. What would be the outcome if the headline reads, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines will provide you with 0.7% efficacy? Nobody would take it. And yet, that is a number that has been excluded. Why was it excluded? You have at least minimal 500 outstanding, highly intelligent, very qualified, very knowledgeable, and resource-savvy individuals working within the media, both print and broadcasting, who could have found the same article we did, and who could have read the British Medical Journal's senior editor as we did, and said that there is a subjective and there's an objective. And the objective statistic is 0.7% efficacy, which means no efficacy, no reason to take it. Did the New York Times tell you, or any of the others, that by taking the vaccine, it was never tested to see if it would prevent you getting COVID? It was never tested to see if you could spread COVID once vaccinated. It was never tested to see if it would keep you out of the hospital. It was never tested to see if it would lower your death rate. Isn't that the reason most people would take a vaccine? It would prevent from moderate to severe complications. Okay, that's one issue. Second issue is they're using a PCR test. I believe that I'm the only person that actually filmed the inventor of that PCR, Professor Kary Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for the PCR discovery in 1993. I interviewed him in October 15th, 1996, in a three-hour interview. I'm going to air that interview in its entirety within the week. And he said, do not use my test to determine viral load or if a person is active with a virus, because it's based upon amplifications. You're seeing a tiny piece of a particle, and you don't even know if it's the virus in question. It doesn't have that kind of specific reading. If it's an old virus or a new virus, which COVID virus is it? It can't tell that. But once you amplify it over and over and over again, magnifying one piece again and again and again, finally you can see, well, there's that virus there, or there's not, or it's a dead virus. But they're all being labeled as positive, and therefore positive means that you're now a case, which means you have a disease. But they're testing more people. The more people you test, the more false positives you're going to get. So why isn't that being challenged? Why would you create a whole national program of quarantining, closing businesses, and then telling people they must have a vaccine, and then you say there's nothing to be done, you can't do anything, wash your hands, wear a mask, social distance, and stay quarantined? Why, with over 20,000 articles in the PubMed, the government's own official library of medicine, which is considered the finest independent database of medicine in the world, why is it with over thousands and thousands of studies on vitamin D protecting your immune system, vitamin C, selenium, and zinc, why aren't these being advocated on a daily basis or put into nursing homes, assisted living centers, in every hospital in the United States at doses high enough to help a person's immune system. The science says it would work. It does work. It's not subjective, it's objective, not a word. And then we have drugs like ivermectin at low doses, 8, 12, 15 milligrams, totally safe, safer than an aspirin, used on hundreds of millions, if not billions of people over its lifespan, over 40 trials on it, studies, all positive, pennies per tablet, not a mention. And what about hydroxychloroquine with zinc and zithromycin? Over 240 studies now, over 130 in peer-reviewed literature, showing the majority showing it works and can save lives preventatively, and also you could break either with ivermectin or with hydroxychloroquine. If you get it when you start having symptoms, you have a very high. Official rate is 60, around 63 to 66%, but even in a hospital, it has over 30% efficacy rate of stopping a person from dying. Why isn't that advocated? It's in the peer-reviewed literature. Instead, it's attack. Why would you attack an inexpensive, proven drug that's 60 years old more and not promote that, not promote vitamins, not promote healthier lifestyle for people who have comorbidities like obesity? Why not? Is this by negligence, lack of interest, or is there another agenda? Yet you're promoting only the vaccine. So the idea is wait till we have a miracle drug, take that, but nothing in between. There's virtually no medical protocol to prevent this. This is either the dumbest group of scientists in world history. You could get a better outcome with the Three Stooges running a pandemic than what we see. So we're bringing in a person who has a deep background on undercovering the truth, what lies behind the scenes. And she knows exactly how to do that because she's done it many times. She's taken on a lot of major giants that were considered untouchable and had the same tools, chose not to find. Alexis Baden Mayer, Washington-based lawyer and a very strong populist activist. She's been associated a long time as the political director of the Organic Consumers Organization and its fund, and she's the co-editor with Ronnie Cummins of the Organic Consumer Organization's Organic Bites newsletter. And the website is organicconsumers.org. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Gary.
Now, I've given you why the obvious, the death tolls that are not accurate. Suddenly we have no one dying of flu this year, though we average about 40,000 per year, sometimes going as high as 60,000, Canada the same way. No flu deaths. Well, that's not humanly possible. That's not statistically possible. And yet the overall death count all across the world has not spiked. So if you have all the deaths from COVID and can prove by autopsy or blood analysis from COVID, that's fine. But they don't have that. If they gave proper death toll, then we wouldn't have a pandemic. If they gave a proper test to determine if you're active, then we wouldn't have cases. We'd just have positives, and it wouldn't be false positives. If we had used a preventative medical program and a preventative program people could do on their own, we would have prevented probably half. And if we had used the medications that are inexpensive, we would have saved probably 75% of all people who've died. And we'd be open for ideas. This is a closed shop controlled by a small cabal of people. And the media has chosen not to do a single story about Fauci except to praise him as if he's a godlike figure. And they praise Bill Gates. But you've done some work on the other people, people that we've never heard of. I'm going to give you six people. I want you to give us what your research has shown and why you're concerned that we've gotten it wrong. Dr. Christian Hassel, who seems to be involved in the funding of biodefense research. Scott Dow, Bill Gates' director at his foundation for surveillance and epidemiology. Dr. Robert Kadlec, K-A-D-L-E-C, who was with the Health and Human Services Department that oversees funding for countermeasures against biological threats, whether it be military, natural, or accidental, therefore biodefense operations. Peter Daszak, president of Echo Health Alliance, who funded gain-of-function research for both military and civilian laboratories. He and his team are among the main virus hunters. Shi Xing Li, the scientist known as China's Batwoman and one of the Chinese virus hunters, and Dr. Ralph Baric, B-A-R-I-C, a Xing Li colleague at the University of North Carolina, both involved in bioengineering bat SARS-like viruses. So please go through these one at a time and show us what evidence you have that you could present in a court of law that would give compelling weight to the fact that this was not a bat naturally mutating, causing all this, and that what role, if any, these individuals are responsible for in what we now see as this COVID-19 strain. The form is yours. Take your time.
Thank you. Well, let's start with Christian Hassel. He was the first person that I profiled. And as far as I know, I am the first person to profile him. He has a very low profile in the federal government. But at the same time that I was looking into his role, there was actually an explosive event that happened. He was called out by a whistleblower for corruption. So I'll get into that. But first, the reason why I was looking into Dr. Christian Hassel is because I was asked by my boss, Ronnie Cummins, who was looking into the possibilities that COVID-19 had leaked from a lab. And Ronnie wanted to know, how do we regulate gain of function research? Why do we allow scientists to go into the lab and take viruses that wouldn't infect human beings or wouldn't kill human beings and make them more infectious and more dangerous to humans? Why do we allow that? And what sort of regulations do we have for it? So I've researched this and got to the point of finding this man, Dr. Christian Hassel. And he is in charge of a secret committee which reviews gain-of-function research on pathogens with pandemic potential. And certainly I found that quite odd. Why would we have a secret committee? So we don't even know who sits on this committee with Dr. Hassel. And before January 2020, we didn't even know that this committee existed. And so that was the first thing that came out. This committee exists, and it's headed up by Dr. Christian Hassel, and otherwise, everything about it is secret. So I learned all about the controversies over this research that does gain-of-function experiments on pathogens with pandemic potential. And what had happened in the Obama administration, there were some really crazy experiments that scientists were doing. They were doing things like resurrecting the 1918 flu and seeing if you could, you know, take viruses from frozen samples, dead bodies that were frozen at the time of the 1918 pandemic, and revive this virus that killed millions of people around the globe. They were doing things like taking the H1N5 virus that was a bird flu that wasn't transmitted amongst human beings and seeing if they could take that bird flu and make it transmissible amongst human beings. So these experiments on these pathogens that could create pandemics was so alarming to the scientific community that there was a huge controversy. And during the Obama administration, they decided that they were going to have a funding pause. That, you know, the other thing about this research is it was all being funded by the National Institutes of Health through Fauci's piece of that organization on infectious diseases. So the Obama administration says, okay, cool it. We're going to pause this research and we're not going to start it up again until we can figure out a way to review the research before it's funded. So this is what we ended up with. We ended up with a secret committee funded or led by this man, Christian Hassel. And so I started looking into Christian Hassel. Who is he? Why did he end up in charge of this? Well, I found it very interesting that his time in the federal government, he hasn't always been at the National Institutes of Health and Health and Human Services. He was, prior to that, in charge of biological weapons for the U.S. military. He was in the office of the defense secretary, and his job was to oversee our biological weapons program, which of course they say is defensive, but I may get into that as well. And prior to that, he worked at the FBI, and his role at the FBI was when, after many years of research, in 2008, the FBI had been looking into the origins of the 2001 anthrax attacks. And finally, in 2008, they pinned it on a scientist who worked at the United States Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases. And they decided that Bruce Ivins was the biological weapons scientist who did this all by himself. Now, you can't find anyone within the federal government practically or the public who believes that story. And yet it was Christian Hassel's job to present that story to the public and the media and to defend it, even as the National Academies of Science reviewed it and found that there was not enough evidence to pin this on Bruce Ivins. So I found it very interesting that was Christian Hassel's resume, and it was now his role to oversee a secret committee to decide when it's okay to fund scientists who are doing gain of function research on pathogens with pandemic potential. Now, I mentioned that at the same time that I began researching Christian Hassel, he ended up in the news, and he was in the news because he works now in the office of ASPR. It's the part of the Health and Human Services Department that decides who gets contracts to help us with disease outbreaks like COVID. And he got caught in a scandal where he asked his boss, Robert Kadlec, if it would be okay if we gave $100 million to, in his words, shady defense contractors who were already in a bunch of trouble with their contracts for the Department of Defense. Now, this is who we have. You know, I guess I shouldn't laugh because obviously lives are at stake. As you mentioned in your intro, you know, these people couldn't do it worse if they were the Three Stooges put in charge of public health. It's absolutely alarming and disturbing to me. And I guess that's why I laugh, because when things are so dark that you can't integrate them into your worldview, then you just have to laugh. But I found the quote from Christian Hassel. He said he used to work for the Chemical and Biological Defense Program, a completely opaque agency that doesn't, you know, publish who it's funding. And he told his boss, Robert Kadlec, that he wanted to give $100 million in contracts to defense contractors who were in trouble for shady dealings, illegal accounting, and lack of accountability. That's a quote that was in a whistleblower's account in this very explosive news item that came out just as I was researching Christian Hassel. So that's who we start with. That's who's in charge here, in charge of our public health, in charge of who gets contracts to create vaccines and other medical countermeasures. You were talking earlier about ivermectin. Another drug that had been in the news was hydroxychloroquine. You know, somehow these cheap antivirals that are tested and we know that they're safe. They're used all over the world. Nobody's making a whole lot of money off of them anymore because they're off patent. Somehow these treatments were brushed aside so that we could make way for new, you know, so-called new antivirals like remdesivir. These are not really new. These are antivirals. They call them, in fact, in the industry, orphan drugs. These are the drugs that, you know, the pharmaceutical companies invested a lot of money in, but they didn't turn out to be able to work for anything. And so they trot these old drugs, these orphan drugs out every time there's a new opportunity for them. And so instead of using the tried and true antivirals, we were told that we needed to investigate new drugs like remdesivir. And I'll get in later to how it's very interesting that a couple of the different characters that I researched end up having a financial relationship to the company Gilead that manufactures remdesivir. So now this has all played itself out. It turns out that the World Health Organization, which doesn't seem to like any of these antivirals and seems to, you know, have this vaccine plan that is going to be the only way that we can treat COVID-19. Even the World Health Organization has now said that Gilead's remdesivir is in the same category. You know, I wouldn't put them in the same category, but the World Health Organization has lumped all the antivirals together and is saying that they don't work. And the only thing we can do now is go for a vaccine. So after figuring out that Christian Hassel was in charge of deciding who funds the dangerous gain of function research on potential pandemic pathogens, that may be the research that caused a lab leak or a lab accident that kicked off this whole pandemic, I was very interested in researching his boss, Robert Kadlec, partly because of this idea that they would exchange emails about defense contractors that they knew were totally shady and already in trouble for lack of accountability, and that these were the people that they wanted to give contracts to produce the COVID-19 vaccines. So I looked into Dr. Robert Kadlec. Currently, he is the Assistant Secretary of Preparedness and Response for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. You know, I have politics very similar to yours, I think, Gary, where I am so jaded, it's hard for me to have any faith that this change of guard in the administration from Donald Trump to Joe Biden is going to make much difference on the issues that I work on. But I think in this case, I think Robert Kadlec and Christian Hassel are so obviously corrupt that should be one of the first things that Joe Biden does. He should fire Christian Hassel and Robert Kadlec, because what they've been doing is they've been giving contracts to work on COVID-19 to the same people that they have lobbied for. In Robert Kadlec's case, before he ended up in charge of giving government contracts to pharmaceutical companies, he was lobbying for Emergence BioSolutions. This company goes all the way back. Also, I found it very interesting that Christian Hassel had worked on the FBI anthrax cover-up. Well, Robert Kadlec, the company that he lobbied before he came back to the government, Emergent BioSolutions, is the old Bioport. And that was the company that got the contract for the anthrax vaccine, both before and after the 2001 anthrax attacks. And now he lobbied for them, he gets back in the government, and here he has a great new opportunity to give billions of dollars to this company to make COVID-19 vaccines. Right now, Robert Kadlec, how is that possible that we can have someone in the government who lobbies for a pharmaceutical company and then his job is to give contracts to pharmaceutical companies and he gives the biggest, fattest contracts to the same company that he lobbied for? I don't know how that's legal. And if Joe Biden can't do anything about that, then he has no right to be president. because this man is in charge of an $11.5 billion budget to work on, you know, COVID-19 and other infectious diseases. So that's Dr. Robert Kadlec. And now we get into the people. My assignment was to look into the regulatory system, who in government has set up this situation where we're funding this dangerous research that if a lab accident occurs, there could be a pandemic. And now who are the scientists who are doing this crazy gain of function research? Well, one of them is Dr. Ralph Baric. And I found it very interesting when I Googled him, and one of the first things that came up was a headline. And the headline was, "New SARS-like virus can jump directly from bats to humans, no treatment available." And of course, that could be the headline in 2020. But the odd thing about this is that's an old headline. That article was published in 2015. And I mentioned earlier that the reason why the Obama administration had clamped down on gain-of-function research on potential pandemic pathogens is because of some really crazy experiments where they took viruses that either couldn't infect humans or viruses that were not very dangerous to humans, and they took them into the lab and they made them infectious to humans and they made them deadly to humans. Ralph Baric was doing this with SARS. We remember the first SARS, and now COVID-19 is SARS-2. And what we've been told by scientists like Ralph Baric is that SARS and COVID-19 likely came from bats. And the best way to figure out how that happened and to prevent it from happening again is to take related bat viruses and then make them viruses that are dangerous to human beings. So that's what he did. He used genetic engineering and synthetic biology. He created a new SARS-like virus that can jump directly from bats to humans. And guess who his favorite collaborator was? Shizhen Li, who works at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And Wuhan happens to be the place where we have a new SARS-like virus that the scientists tell us can jump directly from bats to humans. Now, I find it I don't know why anybody believes that story when you know that scientists are doing this in a lab, and then they tell you, well, gosh, I've been doing this in a lab for nearly 20 years, but I think this happened naturally in nature, even though here in Wuhan, there are no bats. People don't eat bats. There were no bats at the wet market, and there's no possible way somebody could have gotten infected by a bat. And we happen to be the largest repository for bat viruses, and we research them to make them more dangerous and more infectious to human beings, and to see if we can create SARS-like viruses in the lab. But don't look here if you're looking for the origin of COVID-19. It just strains all credibility. So the next lead from that, so I was looking at Ralph Baric, and I thought it was very important to find out who was funding Ralph Baric's research. And it turns out that the collaboration between Ralph Baric and Shizhen Li, where they collected a wild bat virus, took it into the lab, and made it dangerous to human beings, that was funded by EcoHealth Alliance. And it sounds like, you know, EcoHealth Alliance, it sounds like Organic Consumers Association, my organization, it sounds like a do-gooder nonprofit. But what I found fascinating when I started researching EcoHealth Alliance and its leader, Peter Daszak, who is a scientist who works with Ralph Baric and Shizhen Li, what I found fascinating is that EcoHealth Alliance does get money from the National Institutes of Health and from Anthony Fauci's department in the National Institute of Health that works on infectious diseases. So it does get money from that funding stream. But it's getting a whole lot of money from the Department of Defense. And it's getting a whole lot of money through a program called the Defense Threat Reduction Agency that was supposed to take the biological weapons programs of the former Soviet Union and transfer them into pharmaceutical programs that weren't related to biological weapons. But it seems like, from my analysis of the Pentagon funding at this time and the type of research that the Pentagon is funding through this program now, it seems like we're actually getting into territory that violates the Biological Weapons Convention. And the Biological Weapons Convention is not an especially strong or enforceable treaty, but it is law, and it does prevent the development, stockpiling of biological agents and toxins. And they do specify of types and quantities that have no justification for the prophylactic, protective, or other peaceful purposes. So they do make this big exception. So say you're working on anthrax, which is a known biological weapon, and you know, you're allowed to have as much of it that you can justify for creating prophylactics and protective, you know, biodefense, as they call it, purposes. But one thing that I think is really important in the Biological Weapons Convention is it prohibits the transfer or the assistance with acquiring agents and toxins, you know, pathogens, essentially, that could be used as biological weapons. And that's where I see the Biological Weapons Convention being violated in the funding of Peter Daszak by the Pentagon. Because what they are funding is they're going out into the world and they're collecting these animal viruses, especially bat coronaviruses, but all kinds of viruses, you know, all kinds of viruses that have previously been used in biological weapons research and that could be used as a biological weapon. And the thing that makes a good biological weapon is something that has not previously caused a human outbreak. And so we're not ready with medical countermeasures. Now, there are arguments pro and con about whether COVID-19 would have made a great biological weapon. But in my opinion, the idea that the Department of Defense is funding Peter Daszak and EcoHealth Alliance, and then EcoHealth Alliance is giving these subcontracting on these grants from the Pentagon to the Wuhan Institute of Virology to collect viruses, take them back into the lab, you know, novel viruses, new viruses. That's what I think makes it like a biological weapon. Because if you wanted a good biological weapon, you would either find in nature or create in a lab viruses that have no known countermeasures, so that when somebody ends up in the hospital with a virus, the medical professions don't know what to do. The medical professionals don't know what to do, and it can trigger an outbreak or a pandemic. So I don't think that the Pentagon should be funding this kind of research, but that's what they're doing. And their favorite partner who gets the most money is EcoHealth Alliance, run by Peter Daszak. So the next person that I profiled was, after doing Ralph Baric and Peter Daszak, their collaborator, Xu Zhengli. She's known as China's Batwoman. And Gary, the last time I spoke with you, we talked a lot about the work that Xu Zhengli was doing in the years preceding the COVID-19 outbreak that happened to start in the city where she does her research. So I won't go into details on that. But again, I think that this skirts the edges, probably breaks the rules of the Biological Weapons Convention. And I find it very, very odd that Xu Zhengli, who is essentially finding novel bat viruses and, you know, doing this practically the same thing that you would do if you wanted to weaponize them in a lab, she's doing this with Pentagon funding, and she's doing it at a lab that is now controlled by the Chinese military. So it was already, the Wuhan Institute of Virology was already controlled by the Chinese government. But when COVID-19 happened, they sent in their top biological weapons scientist. They sent that person, oh, she's a woman, a general. I'm not remembering her name, but it's in my article about Xu Zengli. They sent her to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and they put her in charge of those laboratories. And that may be why those laboratories have not been searched by independent third parties, and why a lot of the public data and public information that the Wuhan Institute of Virology kept on their work on bat coronaviruses, why that information is not available right now, and why even though the World Health Organization is supposedly going into China as we speak to investigate the origins of COVID-19, why they won't have open access to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So Ralph Baric, Xu Zengli, Peter Daszak, these are the top scientists involved in gain of function research on potential pandemic pathogens. And they just so happen to have been working on bat coronaviruses in Wuhan right before this pandemic comes out. You know, this was not what I expected to find when I started this research at all. And honestly, if I could be, you know, blissfully unaware, I would be a happier person. You know, the next thing I wanted to look into, again, as I started my research, it took me into strange places. My organization, Organic Consumers Association, is very concerned about health. That's why we advocate for organic food, because we know the science tells us that eating organic food increases human health. And we are very interested in the safety of vaccines. Now that makes us, you know, untouchables essentially in society right now. So I fear even saying that that's a topic that we're interested in. And that's a very sad state of affairs, because I feel like my free speech as a health advocate and activist is really being clamped down now in this culture. You know, I really worry that if we take on the issue of vaccine safety, that we could lose access to our contacts on social media, that we could be scrubbed from the internet.
Alexis, let me just get onto another topic, if you would, please. Anthony Fauci, the darling of the Democratic Party at this moment, and because he's been the head of the National Institutes of Health, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease for 37 years now, and he has a long list of debacles on his resume during that time that no one in the mainstream media wants to discuss. After 9/11, Fauci shifted a lot of his agency's attention towards biodefense research, which received a lot of criticism at that time by the medical community. So take us to Fauci's journey, as you have discovered, since 2001 in the anthrax scare, through the mishandling of the swine flu epidemic, and to the present, as well as his support for gain-of-function research on viruses.
Yes. So we've reviewed the scientists involved in coronavirus research, Ralph Baric, Peter Daszak, and Xu Zengli. So let's go back to the National Institutes of Health, where they get a lot of their funding, although we have mentioned that some of their funding, maybe a majority of it, comes from the Pentagon. So the National Institutes of Health has a subsection, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, NIAID, and that organization, since 1984, has been run by Dr. Anthony Fauci. And Dr. Anthony Fauci figures into this whole topic of gain-of-function research on coronaviruses because he has been an absolute proponent and cheerleader for this very dangerous research where scientists take these pathogens that wouldn't otherwise be so deadly or contagious amongst human beings and give them gains of function in the lab. In the Obama administration, I mentioned there were huge controversies over that. And Anthony Fauci definitely came down on the side of funding this research and not putting very many restrictions on it. And it was very interesting that I looked back at one of the most controversial experiments, and that was the H5N1 bird flu experiments, where they took the bird flu was making poultry sick. And then occasionally it would leap to human beings from birds, but it wasn't being transmitted between human beings. And so its pandemic potential was somewhat low. And then scientists who supposedly were trying to protect us from this virus becoming a pandemic, they decided to take this virus into the lab and give it the function of being able to be transmitted from person to person. Now, I learned in my research that Dr. Anthony Fauci was the person who orchestrated the funding of that very most controversial gain-of-function research. He organized a whole committee of scientists to produce a paper on why this gain-of-function research on H5N1 was necessary. And then the very scientists that he put on this committee, Ron Fauchier and a Japanese-American scientist, Kawaoka, he put these very same scientists on this committee to drum up public support and scientific support for the idea that we need to mess with these viruses in the lab. And then he got lots of funding through NIH, but also privately for this research. And that takes me to my next two subjects, Bill Gates and Scott Dowell, because I was very surprised when, you know, I had seen the film Plandemic. I didn't really think much of it. It seemed very thin. And, you know, even while I agreed with, you know, it seemed like a lot of the information they included about Bill Gates, it checked out, but there wasn't really a link. You know, the film is called Plandemic. The idea is that there's an actual link between Bill Gates and COVID-19, not just that Bill Gates has taken advantage of COVID-19. You know, certainly I'm aware that the companies that are putting out the vaccines, these are companies that Bill Gates is personally invested in. You know, there's the angle like with Robert Kadlec, where there are people just ready to profit from disasters. And I saw Bill Gates as somebody who was just ready to profit from the disaster. I did, and perhaps, you know, he eerily predicted the COVID-19 pandemic. But if your business is pharmaceutical companies and you're always saying we need to do research on creating medical countermeasures to potential pandemics, you might always be predicting a pandemic. So that was my view on Bill Gates when I first started looking into this. But actually what I found was that Bill Gates was actually a funder of some of the most controversial gain-of-function research. And, you know, Anthony Fauci, he was the one who got scientists, Kawaoka and Fauchier, to mess with the H5N1 virus in the lab, take a bird flu virus that wasn't transmissible among humans, make it transmissible. I was looking at that study by Kawaoka, scrolled down to find out, you know, who was funding it. I wanted to check to see, like, well, how much money have these scientists gotten from NIH? And there I saw Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation as one of the funders. So again, that's not smoking gun evidence. It doesn't go as far still as the concept of a plandemic, but it suggests a form of recklessness that people invested in pharmaceutical companies who do make money from vaccines, that they would be funding research that could accidentally cause a pandemic. And so at least it suggests a type of negligence, for which you can be held accountable, even under the law. So I ended up researching Scott Dowell, who now works for the Gates Foundation, because he's the connection. So after I realized, like, the Gates Foundation funds all this crazy research that could cause pandemics, I wanted to see, well, is there any connection between the Gates Foundation and gain-of-function research on coronaviruses in particular, because, you know, just because Gates funds these crazy bird flu experiments doesn't mean that there is an actual link between the Gates Foundation and the research that may have caused the pandemic to happen in Wuhan. But it does turn out that there is a direct link between EcoHealth Alliance, the organization funding the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and the Gates Foundation. And the connection is Dr. Scott Dowell. He was the CDC's top virus hunter. And it's not just the Pentagon that goes out and collects novel viruses to take back to the lab to engineer and use synthetic biology to make new viruses for which there are no cures. The Centers for Disease Control, oddly enough, has been doing that same research, which is so dangerous, because if you have a lab accident, you've created a new pandemic for which we have no treatments. But the Centers for Disease Control has been doing this same, I would say, silly stuff. It's just so reckless. And Scott Dowell was the lead virus hunter for the Centers for Disease Control. And one thing that he was obsessed with was finding cases where H5N1 was transmitting between human beings. Now, you can certainly say that is a good preventative instinct. Let's make sure that we're surveilling all cases of bird flu. And if we see any case where it looks like it may have been transmitted amongst human beings, let's make sure to jump in that and make sure that we stop a pandemic right away. But instead of just like jumping on that case and making sure we stop a pandemic, what they tend to do, these scientists, is like, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe this didn't cause a pandemic, but I definitely need a sample of that virus. And I definitely need to take that virus back to the lab. And I definitely need to see if I can make it even more dangerous than it appears to have been made. So there's an interesting New Yorker article where Scott Dowell is profiled, and he tells the story of being in Thailand and hearing news from his Thai colleagues that the bird flu may have been transmitted in a hospital setting between close relatives. And he was crazy about getting that virus. He was like, do not let the family embalm the body or bury the body. We need to get that virus before anything happens. It's just a pretty crazy mindset. So that wraps up most of the scientists and the connections that they, it's odd that they all seem to be connected to one another through the funding, through the pharmaceutical companies that they work with, through these nonprofits like the Gates Foundation, that in addition to government agencies fund the research. And my latest installment in the Gain of Function Hall of Fame is a scientist named David R. Franz. And I started researching him because a couple of my colleagues, work colleagues, they don't work for Organic Consumers Association, but other friends of mine who have been researching the origins of COVID-19, most notably Sam Husseini, who has been publishing great articles in Salon, and also Meryl Nass, who has an anthrax blog where she's very active on the COVID-19 pandemic and is producing a lot of information. So a couple of my close associates, Meryl Nass and Sam Husseini, had both pointed out that there was another connection between Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance and the Pentagon. And I had already seen that, geez, he gets, you know, tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, from the Pentagon. I guess I should be more accurate by that and say that since 2003, government databases show that the EcoHealth Alliance has gotten over $100 million from the federal government. And a good portion of that comes from the Defense Department. So tens of millions of dollars from the Department of Defense. And so another link that they pointed out between EcoHealth Alliance and the Pentagon and the Pentagon's biological weapons research is Dr. David R. Franz. Currently, he is EcoHealth Alliance's policy and science advisor. It's not clear whether this is a paid position or not. I assume it probably is a paid position. And it likely explains how EcoHealth Alliance has been more adept than any other nonprofit scientific institution doing virus research in getting government contracts. They are definitely getting more Pentagon contracts than any other organization of their kind. And it's probably because David Franz, who once led USAMRID, the biological weapons laboratory in Frederick, Maryland, he was a commander of the U.S. Biological Defense Program. He is an advisor to EcoHealth Alliance. And David Franz, so again, this goes back to the 2001 anthrax attacks, just like Christian Hassel, who is now in charge of deciding what gain-of-function research is funded by the National Institutes of Health. He had been involved in the anthrax investigation that the FBI did as a scientist. He was in charge of that at the time that the FBI placed the blame on Bruce Ivins, which most people, even David Franz, who was Bruce Ivins' colleague and commander at USAMRID, even David Franz doesn't think that Bruce Ivins did it. But I found very interesting links between David Franz and the 2001 anthrax attacks. And the connection is that he left USAMRID and he retired from the military in 1998, I believe, and then it was 1999, 2000, and 2001. He was working for a defense contractor, the Southern Research Institute, and this defense contractor had a role in a DARPA grant. The DARPA is a defense program. It's called the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. They are the in-house tech company of the Pentagon, and they are constantly funding new frontiers in weapons research. And they had funded David Franz and two other colleagues of his, Charles Bailey, who was a commander of USAMRID before David Franz, and also Ken Alabeck, who had run a 40,000 person biological weapons lab for the Soviet Union. The three of these guys, the top biological weapons experts in the world, were given a DARPA contract to essentially weaponize anthrax. And they likely took a genetically modified strain of anthrax that was especially deadly, although I don't happen to know. It's just that the federal government was also contracting for genetically modified anthrax at the time, and Alabeck had a specialty in that. But what we do know is that this DARPA contract involved microencapsulation, creating little spheres of anthrax pathogen at the nano scale and encapsulating them in silicon so that they were so slippery and electrostatically charged that if you had a tiny, less than a spoonful of them in an envelope, and then you open that envelope, poof, they would go into the air aerosolized and float and be able to cover for, a tiny amount of anthrax, they would be able to cover a very large area. And this happens to be the very anthrax that was used in the 2001 attacks. If you're not old enough like I am to remember this happening, what happened was there were letters mailed to the Senate, mailed to Senator Leahy, mailed to Senator Daschle, and they ended up killing primarily postal workers who were involved in sorting the mail. But the whole Hart office building where these senators worked had to be evacuated and decontaminated. And everybody, I lived in Washington at the time, and people that I knew who worked on Capitol Hill, everybody had to take Cipro, a heavy-duty antibiotic, to protect from possible anthrax infection because this extremely weaponized form of anthrax had been used in the attack. And then not long after the attack, I mean, we know that the anthrax attacks were used to justify the war in Iraq. But of course, that was all false. Everybody knew almost from the get-go, the FBI knew at least, and government scientists knew that the only entity that had ever created this type of anthrax was the U.S. Defense Department. And David Franz happened to be one of the scientists who had the contract to create it. So it's just a very odd coincidence that there are three people who have power and or access in this whole stream of events that likely resulted in a lab accident, I suppose, in Wuhan and the COVID-19 pandemic, that there are these strange parallels between what we're experiencing now and what happened in 2001 with the anthrax attacks.
Okay, my final question is, unfortunately, the Biological Weapons Convention rules and guidelines are weak. If in fact these coronaviruses have been engineered as biological weapons, then these laboratories, which of course are conducting this research with various governments' nod of approval, are doing this research under cloak of secrecy. What are the convention's weaknesses and what needs to be done to make this research more transparent? Because there still remain a lot of unanswered questions about what research was actually being performed with these coronaviruses. And based upon the need for those in power now to censor everyone who has a counter point of view, in fact, there's even discussions going on Capitol Hill about having a new czar, a person that heads, let's say, fake news. And of course, they will determine what is fake. And if you talk about them or any of the agencies they support or any of their policies, then it's fake news, and then you can be attacked. So free speech itself is under attack. The openness of science is under attack. The totally compromised media is under attack. Governmental agencies working at the behest of special interest groups is under attack. And yet all that will go away, and you'll hear nothing said about any of this, including none of what you're saying, if they continue with their agenda. What can we do to make a difference? And summarize what you believe is the final outcome. And you only have 2 minutes to summarize, please.
Thank you, Gary. Well, in terms of the Biological Weapons Convention, what is definitely needed is an independent agency within the United Nations whose job it is to investigate complaints of violations of the Biological Weapons Convention. Right now, the entity that has that job is the Security Council. And certainly if we had a very democratic United Nations, then the Security Council would be the appropriate entity to investigate complaints of the Biological Weapons Convention being violated. But right now, the Security Council gives China, France, Russia, the United Kingdom, and the United States veto power over Security Council decisions, including whether to conduct a Biological Weapons Convention investigation. And so certainly in this instance, where we have a Chinese lab controlled by the Chinese government, and there's research that's being funded partly by the U.S. Department of Defense, the Pentagon, if China and or the United States could be found to have violated the Biological Weapons Convention and conducted research that it shouldn't, and this resulted in a lab leak and caused a pandemic, then the Security Council, I don't think you'd see China or the United States allowing the Security Council to conduct that investigation.
Okay, well, I thank you. What you're telling us from your perspective, both objectively and subjectively. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you very much for being with us today, Alexis. We look forward to another conversation.
Brother, brother, there's far too many of you die.